If we're very, very quiet, can we hear it?
You can,
the water?
You can hear the water and the rustling of the leaves.
I'm not sure I'm can. It doesn't look very grand, does it, for a river that's so famous in geography, so famous in politics. It is a muddy stream, completely encased in thick, high walls of reeds. You can't quite jump across it, I'd say, but how wide is that, Ben?
I think maybe 4 or 5 metres.
If we were to try and travel straight from here to the sea, how long would it take us?
I think it's like 80, 90 kilometres tops. When I go with my kids to the sea, it's about an hour 15 drive, and I'm at the beach. I'm in Herzliya.
Herzliya's on the Mediterranean coast of Israel. It's just north of Tel Aviv. And the, well, apology for a river that Ben Levy, who's a very enthusiastic Israeli nature ranger with a bushy black beard, and I have crashed through the reeds to, is the Jordan. Should we go?
Yeah, not to agitate the Jordanian soldiers who guard the river. They're really edgy about it.
Because the Kingdom of Jordan on the other bank, on the east bank, and Israeli-occupied territory here on the west. Politics already. The Jordan's so near the sea that with good boots, you could even walk it in 3 days. And as I started to hear the phrase, from the river to the sea, more and more, I had a mad idea to try to find out on foot what the words really meant. It's a pro-Palestinian slogan used most recently at protests against the war in Gaza. And its precise meaning is the subject of intense controversy. Palestinians and Israelis generally understand it in different ways. I wanted to try and unpick the slogan and feel, measure the physical and human reality of those 90 kilometres. To tramp across what's probably the most contested stretch of land in the world, the width of the West Bank, which is only slightly larger than the second smallest US state, Delaware, and the width of the coastal strip of Israel beyond, and talk to whoever I met along the way. But because of the politics, walking was a seriously naive idea. So I'm going by car. Taking a few days, zigzagging a bit, and meeting many different Palestinians and Israelis, shepherds and teachers, soldiers and gardeners, artists and activists, and nature lovers like Ben.
So all of this area, it's a reserve, a nature reserve from the times of the British Mandate.
Oh, that far back?
Yeah.
So this was Turkish, it was the Ottoman Empire, then it was British, Palestine, the Mandate, in between the two world wars. Then, until 1967, it was Jordan, and since 1967, it's been controlled by Israel. So there's another jackal! Fox-like creature suddenly disappeared round the side of that cliff, tail bobbing behind it. We're rising out of the valley from about 400 metres below sea level, close to the lowest place on Earth. It's like a moon landscape, basically a series of craters, jagged cliffs.
We're protecting here an amazing variety of wildlife. Gazelles, wolves, boars and hyenas, lots of songbirds.
So that's why you love this job?
Oh yeah, exactly.
And you're a kind of outdoors kind of guy?
Yeah, totally.
Do you think this will always be Israeli, this area now?
I sure do hope so. I would only say that the Jordan Valley was always in the consensus of staying Israeli.
Whose consensus?
The Israeli consensus. Security and national interests.
A warning. Facts and definitions and maps and slogans are as contested here as land is. Israel has occupied the West Bank since the Six-Day War 57 years ago. And even nature reserves are a highly political subject. The British established some, but the Israelis have created many more, and Palestinians see them as an instrument of control. But these two programmes, this is the first, aren't a definitive guide to the rights and wrongs of the Middle East conflict. They're an attempt to find out what people think between the river and the sea since the October the 7th Hamas attack on Israel and the war that's followed. Some views, Israeli views particularly, you'll hear more in the second programme after I've left the West Bank. Gaza's not on my route. It lies south and west of where the Jordan finally trickles into the Dead Sea. But the shadow of the war hangs over everything. Basically, what you're saying is, in an Israeli car, we shouldn't stop in a village.
It's a risk. Before we go into the Palestinian villages, I would consider putting on personal protection gear.
Bulletproof vest.
Yeah, just in case, because there's been a few terror incidents, shooting at cars, stone throwing.
This is Alon Farago, the Israeli journalist who's accompanying me on parts of my journey. He's talking about attacks by Palestinians on Israelis. Well, this has got far worse since last October, since the beginning of the war with Hamas.
Yes, yes. Put the TV sign on. Maybe they think twice about shooting a TV crew.
Or even a radio crew.
You will need a bigger sign to write radio.
A lot of Velcro here. Right.
You're doing the wrong bit. You actually put them on so rarely.
Oh, I put them on all the time.
At least 15 Israelis have been killed by Palestinians on the West Bank since October the 7th, according to official Israeli statistics. And the Palestinian Health Ministry says more than 550 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli soldiers or settlers. Trouble can flare up at any time, but some roads are easier or safer to travel on with Israeli license plates. On others, if you have the rare luxury of choice, it's better to be in a Palestinian registered vehicle. It's like so complicated, this web of who can do what with what license plate on what road, with what ID, in what direction.
It is, it is.
I've devised a system of handovers, working out safe rendezvous locations where I can swap between Alon and Palestinian guides in Palestinian cars. They'll take me to Palestinian places. With Alon, I'll visit Israeli settlements. So this is the Tesla goat farm at Agaman, quite high up overlooking the valley. Already 67 metres above sea level, 2.5 kilometres from the river, 68 to the sea. Oh, a very rich farmyard smell. These are long-eared goats, kind of pendulous ears. Hello, there's a woman here with curly black hair, a pink T-shirt. Hi, nice to meet you. Hi, I'm Tim.
Frida Tesla.
Frida is cutting up little bits of cheese.
You are not eating, only talking.
She makes it from the goat's milk. You're quite sharp.
Yes.
And sells it, in quieter times, to tourists. But not surprisingly, there aren't many tourists on the West Bank right now. So passing journalists are also fair game.
Do you know what you want?
I really like that, Tom. I definitely like
one. Is the wine or is that?
No, I like that saltier, Tom. The cheese is good, but not as good as the view over the Jordan Valley. What a beautiful place.
I built it to be beautiful. It wasn't like this before.
What was here before?
Nothing. I came here 50 years ago like a soldier. After we finish, we stay here. There was another kind of time.
When Israelis were just starting to settle the West Bank, often, as here at Agaman, it was on land that neighbouring Palestinian villages claimed was theirs. Most countries say the settlements are against international law. As to how many settlers there are now, well, as ever, it depends on definitions. Maybe 750,000, if you include East Jerusalem in the West Bank, as Palestinians do. Perhaps 500,000, if, like Israel, you don't. Jerusalem's a whole other argument. Anyway, the settlers live among, again very roughly, 3 million West Bank Palestinians. Confused? Let's instead count sheep. There are certainly more and more Israeli sheep, and they're not all just there for making cheese. I'm now driving north along the Jordan Valley in a Palestinian registered car with Palestinian driver Rashid. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, my friend.
Oh, wow, so we're arriving now. This is Al-Farisiyah.
This is Al-Farisiyah, where we're going to stay.
Back down to 150 metres below sea level, I've zigzagged a bit. Only 4 kilometres from the river, 61 to the sea.
So this is just off the road, and basically this is just shelters underneath billowing plastic sheets. It looks seriously impermanent. How many families is this?
Around the 12 family.
The rather scraggy sheep in these pens are Palestinian, not Israeli, and their ability to graze is being challenged in a conflict with local settlers that's intensified since October the 7th.
So this kind of like collection of shelters is surrounded by a ring of Israeli flags fluttering in the breeze.
Yeah.
So strange. And who's put the flags there?
The settlers who try to scare the family. This is the old man we're going to meet.
Hi.
Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.
Abu Khairi, you can call him Abu Khairi.
Hi, nice to meet you. This is an elderly man in a black jacket, a Czech kafir.
You're Sultanian? I'm what is he?
The first thing, like one night, the settlers came with the goats and his sheep. Later they came with his materials that's making a coffee, and they enter to the animal's house.
The enclosure for the sheep, yeah.
Yeah, and they start making coffee.
Start making coffee?
Yes. And even later they was coming with the Israeli military. The soldiers, they ask him to leave. They are not allowed to be there. And they say, no, this is my land, I will be there. They come one time to try to grow the wheat.
To plow the land?
Yeah. And Abu Khairi, he just slept, you know, in front of the tractor.
You lay down in front of the tractor? Weren't you scared?
No, I loved to know that.
He don't scared. He said, I will die just one time.
There's more rather different looking people arrive now in jeans and boots. Israelis. Hello, hello.
My name is Meira Asher, and I'm a Jordan Valley activist. It's an ad hoc, a group of about 200 people. Our main goal is to help the local communities stay on their lands. Maybe our presence is intimidating the settlers that are contemplating coming here to harass.
So you're going to stay here all night?
Yeah.
And Rashid and I are bedding down too, slightly nervously, to see what happens. It's really dark apart from this chain of lampposts on top of the hill, which is the settlement across the valley.
Right. A few months ago, this boy, 2 o'clock in the morning, he arrives with a tractor, and they say, okay, we are going to plant garlic here.
Hang on, but this is like surreal.
Not here.
Somebody came down the hill in the middle of the night to plant garlic.
Yeah. It's not surreal over here. This is the reality here. So the activists that were here on guard that night were attacked by them, physically.
Well, it's about 11 o'clock at night. The activists have now rolled out their sleeping bags. You can't hear much now, apart from occasional coughing of the sheep in their enclosure. Okay, good night. First cockcrow, and it's only 10 to 2 in the morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, sabah al khair.
Did you sleep well? It's nice morning, you know. With the chicken around. Yeah. Coffee?
Thank you very much. It's just after 5 in the morning, and it's been a quiet night. The sun hasn't come up yet, but there's a bit of colour coming into the grass on the hillside. And Rashid's brought me some cold canned coffee.
I think it's a bit hard to stay in a hotel, you know.
Actually, we originally arranged to spend a night at the settlement on the hill opposite Rotem. The Israeli activists say a very small number of people from there are responsible for much of the harassment of Palestinian shepherds and for some of the physical attacks. But the settlement later said they didn't want us to come. Since then, one of its leaders has told me, they don't encourage violence or send anyone to commit it. The activists who say they were assaulted here complained to the Israeli police, but no arrests were made.
The settlers, I mean, they really hate you, don't they? Even though you're Jewish, they call you anti-Semitic, they call you crazy left-wingers. They will say that legally a community like this does not have the right to be here. You know, the West Bank's divided into areas, all very complicated, because of the provisions 30 years ago in the Oslo agreements between Israel and, well, then the PLO, the Palestinian leadership at the time, that said that Israel would control who builds and who
Israel
doesn't build in this area.
Has no right to control this area at all.
But the PLO accepted that.
Well, the PLO accepted that under certain conditions which were not fulfilled.
Under the Oslo agreements of the mid-1990s, more than 60% of the West Bank, Area C, mainly rural land, stayed under full Israeli control. The agreements raised hopes for a Palestinian state on the West Bank and in Gaza, but gradually that prospect grew dimmer and dimmer. We'll come back to Areas A, B and C later. They affect, almost define, everyone's daily life on the West Bank in different ways, according to who you are. But there's something else that's troubling me.
If Abu Herd has been here all his life, why is he living in a shack?
Because, okay, that's also an angle of interpretation. These are communities that live in nature. Some of the people in the Jordan Valley have houses in the towns in Palestine. Yeah. It's not so much about poverty. This is more about the insistence to live your own way of life.
About identity. Also at stake in the West Bank sheep wars. I'm back with Palestinian Rashid Safate.
They're trying to steal the Palestinian farmers' style of life, you know, as shepherd, even the same food. It's trying to steal the culture, not just the land.
They're taking over your culture.
Of course, somehow the Israelis, they make us even forget the beauty of our life, you know.
They make you forget the beauty of your life.
Exactly.
So we're now passing really just a few metres away from this boy. He's got a dog.
A teenager from an Israeli outpost a bit further along the road, herding cattle on a hillside as a Palestinian shepherd and his flock go past, accompanied by Meira, another activist called Jacob, and me.
He's watching us silently, we're watching him. Feels a bit eerie, feels a bit unsettling.
Yeah, it is.
There's about 20, 25 cows and calves. There's just like 20 metres between them and the flock of sheep, and actually the cows are now getting closer. They have almost mixed, going in opposite directions, the Israeli cows and the Palestinian sheep. The boy's watching us. It's almost warfare by animals.
It's a choreography. The animals are the instruments to take over territories. Sometimes they just intermingle, you know, and sometimes it can come to some physical violence.
Meira, do you think that there can be one country for everybody, or do you think there has to be two countries?
I believe in one country for everyone. But one democratic state, two states, whatever. We are very, very late. There are scars, there are fresh wounds. It's just the future of this place is very dark. I think it's a little bit naive to believe that anything like this can happen during the next 100 years. Now you look at me. What?
In the next 100 years?
At least.
I mean, Israel has only existed, you know, for
70-odd
you know? Years.
Yeah. If you come from a colonizer, I mean, we can study from the apartheid in South Africa to see what the process looked like.
So you're saying this is a situation of colonization and needs to be decolonized?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But not many Israelis think that.
I think in Herzliya you might meet quite a lot of Israelis who think the other way, yeah.
This is my favourite one.
This is your favourite goat.
She believes in a two-state solution.
One state for the sheep and one state for the goats.
Exactly.
Actually, that black goat, lovely though it is, it's trying to eat through the cable of my microphone.
You're listening to part one of A Slogan and a Land on the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Tim Hewell, travelling from the River Jordan to the Mediterranean Sea.
Now we exit from the Jordan. The name of the checkpoint is Ma'ali Ifrahim.
So we just went through a checkpoint just now.
Yeah, the soldiers, they stop us and they ask us where we are going, and we don't mention Douma village where we are going because there's a lot of activity in Douma, and it's better if we don't say where we are really going. But I'm worried now, you know, and I hope in my way back there will be no soldiers.
So you basically have to have like a map in your head of which is the good road, which is the dangerous road, which is the difficult road, which is the good checkpoint, which is the bad checkpoint. You have to think about all these things all the time.
Yes, of course.
As a Palestinian.
Of course. You know, why I have to live in this system? For what? It's really strange for me, you know, it's really strange.
Do you think that it should be one country, one single country, or two countries?
We can be one country or two countries, but the main important is to have the same level of life, the same freedom, justice, fair life, you know.
Well, this is rather pretty. We're approaching Douma now through olive trees.
610 metres above sea level, 15 kilometres from the river, 54 to the sea.
This is the village council in Douma, and there's quite a commotion here today.
Yes, we speak that the Israeli army will come today.
What?
To destroy a lot of houses and tents outside the village.
Today? I'm here with Anwar Douabshe.
Yeah, and I work in the Directorate of Education, and I work as a tour guide also. The demolition will be in C zone. You know about C zone and B zone and A zone?
Well, I know a little bit about it.
So they want to cut Palestinians into small cantons.
Into small cantons?
Yeah, small cantons, to kill our dream in establishing our state.
He says Douma feels besieged. All around in Israeli-controlled Area C, new settlements arising. Palestinians can only build without Israeli permission in areas A and B, already built-up urban centres. So they say their towns and villages can't expand as the population goes up. In the heart of Douma, Area B, though, they've built something that expresses their hopes for the future.
Yeah, so my name is Suleiman Mleha.
And you've brought me to what looks like the smartest, newest building in Douma.
Yes, I am the education program director for the US non-governmental organization called ENERA. This is kindergarten number 20, which we've built over the past 5 years.
Just to describe, this is quite an expensive swish-looking building. Bright yellow concrete, white stone, marble as well.
We have large windows, ensuring that children are able to see the flowers and the trees outside and daydream. Daydreaming is critical for child development, Tim.
Back at the council offices, they're still expecting the army at any moment. But on the wall, there's a map of a different kind of future.
This is a Palestinian map, and we are here. You see?
Yeah. But this is a map of
Palestine.
From the
Palestine.
River to the sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Does this mark Israeli places as well?
No. It's all the Palestinian villages which was destroyed in 1948 and 1967.
So, for example, it shows Jaffa, but does it show Tel Aviv?
No.
At all?
No, it's Palestine. You can see the title, 1948.
But the roads are not 1948, the roads are new.
Yes.
Does it mean you go back to 1948?
Yes. Everyone must see this map to be sure that one day the people who are in this village will go back to their village in 1948.
Really? All of them?
All of them.
About 6 million Palestinians are registered by the UN either as refugees who lost their homes as a result of the creation of Israel in 1948 or as their descendants. But very few Israelis believe they should be allowed to return because the scale of the influx might mean the end of Israel as a Jewish state.
It's a dream, but we believe that it will happen, inshallah.
But what about the Jewish people in the places like
Tel Aviv? They can go back to Britain, to Morocco, or to any place they come from.
But they can't stay here?
No, they cannot stay here.
They cannot stay here?
No. I'm not the Palestinian government, but for me, it's not visible.
So we're heading immediately west now. Just magical landscape and beautiful villages, Palestinian villages here.
Suleiman Rehat, the kindergarten builder.
These horrible, horrible gates the Israeli army are able to close off any Palestinian community in the West Bank. We've got one just coming up here. That's an orange gate.
Like a steel swing gate.
And that's Jurish, the village of Jurish. So the Israeli army just closes that off whenever you have a crisis in the West Bank. I was born in a Bedouin tent. We're a Bedouin community from a village called Khwelfe. It's now an Israeli kibbutz.
Later, he went to school in England and worked for years for development organisations there.
I left the comfort of London 14 years ago. I came back to do development at grassroots level. Would you like a date, Tim? If you open that.
Oh, I'd love one. Oh, beautiful.
Can I have one?
Sorry. Of course, sorry.
They're nice, aren't they? I've not been able to move very much since October last year. And there's just an ongoing building programme, construction programme in the West Bank of new settlements, bypass roads to avoid, to bypass Palestinian communities and make life easier for Israeli settlers.
Well, presumably because Israeli cars, rocks were being thrown at them.
Correct.
You're not telling me this is the famous homeless place where people got shot?
Yes.
Bad omen. I'm back with my Israeli guide, Alon, and we're stopping for lunch.
Yeah, this place was hit twice by Palestinian gunmen.
So it's a fast food place, mainly specialises in hummus, immediately behind a petrol station.
Yeah.
And the people going in, I can see.
They're religious settlers, or as they call them, national religious.
It's a look I've not seen before, neither secular nor traditional modest religious. Young men in shorts, singlets and long sidewalks, machine guns over their shoulders, young women in high headdresses.
See, that's all Palestinian.
Across the valley, he means, just a few hundred metres away.
I think that's Turmus Aya. It's a very rich Palestinian village, mostly Palestinians who live in the States or lived in the States, and they're building really castles, if you can see there.
Building everywhere. We keep using this word biblical about this landscape, and it is biblical, but arguably it's getting less biblical quite fast. We've reached Shiloh.
Welcome to Shiloh.
A whopping 715 metres above sea level, though still only 22 kilometres from the river, 48 to go to the sea. This is Rehmedad's house. He's got six Israeli flags hanging from the door. Wherever you go in this country, like whatever the passions, the birds sing on. Hello. Shalom, shalom.
My name is Yisrael Medad, born in America. I moved here to Shiloh, the top of the hill, in 1981. And I have been involved in many of the efforts to explain to the world the project of returning Jews to Judea and Samaria.
That's the biblical and modern Israeli name for the West Bank.
And resettling them in our ancient homeland. Don't tell us that we cannot define ourselves. Well, Jews have lived for 3,000 years as the legitimate national movement that should be the sole authority, at least between the river and the sea.
At least between the river and the sea? Yes, you heard right.
So you have a major conflict of from the river to the sea as one slogan, to two banks of the Jordan as another slogan. That's where you begin, in my thinking, to start the compromise and see if you can make arrangements.
He's talking about the ambition of some early Zionist leaders to establish a Jewish national home on both sides of the Jordan. So it would already be a compromise, he says, to give up that dream of the other bank and settle for a single Jewish state that stretches only from the Jordan to the Mediterranean. In other words, even though "from the river to the sea" is generally used as a pro-Palestinian slogan, he and many other right-wing Israelis believe in the same concept, but with a totally different meaning.
I think the only solution, the sole solution, would be a one-state solution, which is the river to the sea. First of all, we for 76 years have been living with Arabs. There are about 21-22% of Israel's population is Arab.
He's talking now just about the population of Israel itself.
We do not exclude them in a fundamental sense that they don't belong there, the way they say that my existence here in Shiloh is state terrorism, according to what I read in their literature.
So you believe in one state, but all together?
Yes, because my bottom line is it cannot be an independent Palestinian state given the geography which you're experiencing, coming up from the Jordan Valley, coming basically to the hills, and then soon you'll be going down towards Herzliya and the coast. You'll see that the topography is very, very threatening to Israel because it allows them to shoot missiles from heights.
So I'm just going to emphasize this, all the noise, the diplomatic noise, is still talking about two states. As far as you're concerned, it's over.
It's over. It shouldn't have been offered.
So this single state between the river and the sea, what will it be called?
The State of Israel.
But would it still be called that if it had a Palestinian majority? The demography is hugely disputed, but about 14 million people live between the river and the sea, very roughly 7 million Jews and 7 million Arabs across the West Bank, Gaza and Israel. What if the balance tips?
We ourselves, if we were larger, and we will be larger, we are outbirthing the Arabs of Judea and Samaria. They also know that in Israel itself, the more religious population is giving birth to more babies, and that sector of the population is becoming larger.
And that gives you confidence?
It gives you great confidence.
What you can hear is hay being tossed with a pitchfork into some troughs for five very sleek, very beautiful cows to munch. One is sticking its pink, rather dribbly snout straight in my face. They are red heifers, as described in the Bible. Are these the only ones here in Shiloh?
Yes.
It's exactly like it was in Bible times.
We hope so. I guess it's not the same thing.
Of course, it's not quite the same thing. The heifers are without blemish, just like the ones that God commands the children of Israel to sacrifice in the book of Numbers, chapter 19. But Merav Shiloh, she's got the same surname as the place, and her husband Avichai, both settlers here, have a rather non-biblical lifestyle. She's an illustrator. He's an actor and playwright who likes to run through Shiloh's intoxicatingly fragrant pine trees.
It's make you another man. Very peaceful. The breeze, the sun, and the history of the place. It's amazing atmosphere that I can't explain it in words.
You're talking about peacefulness. What's then changed for you since October 7th?
We don't surprise about what's happened because we know the Palestinians, we know that they want to kill us, that they want this country or this land. They want to kill me all the time.
All the Jewish people.
You're talking about Hamas, or you're talking more widely?
No, all the Palestinians.
All the Muslims.
All of them, they have an idea, first, to kill all the Jews, and the second step, all the Western civilization. Yeah.
They want to destroy Western civilization.
Everyone.
How do you know that, though?
I listen.
How they're acting.
But, I mean, I'm making this journey, you know, meeting Palestinians as well, and it sounds to me like you are very, very frightened, but they think that you want to kill them. They talk about settlers who want to drive them off the land, who come to
but
them with guns.
Actually, I don't think that the Jewish people acting like this.
At all? Not, using any Jewish people out like this?
Not because, in I mean, Tel Aviv and not here.
So we're looking kind of west, aren't we, towards the setting sun.
You can see all this grape.
It's grapes, yes.
It's a very big winery that's won a lot of prizes all the world. Jewish, it's very different people.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole world need us, needs the Jewish people in the economy, in the high-tech. That's what I believe.
You can see the mountains. Where is the Jewish people? Everything is green. Where is the Arab people? It's nothing. We know how to grow from the land. And what they do? Nothing. Look, nothing.
Saying that the Arabs don't grow things?
They're not. You can look. Green is Jews. Brown, it's Arabs.
You're saying that the land vineyards from that Jewish settlement over there, that they know how to grow things.
And why the Arabs don't do anything with the same land? Why not?
Well, they've been farmers for thousands of years as well. I mean, they grow plenty of things.
But
I mean, they said that the land is taken away from them. They're prevented from growing things.
But they don't. And look.
What do you not see? There's olive trees there. There's vegetables. There's fruit trees. There's many, many things in Arab villages.
Where is the fruit trees? I don't see it. This is green. This is brown. They can and they don't want.
No. I mean, that's not right. We're almost at the top of the hill now.
The Dershin said this is the place was the Mishkan.
Where the tabernacle rested.
It was here.
The tabernacle that for several centuries housed the Ark of the Covenant, containing the tablets with the Ten Commandments.
This is a very, very holy place.
I didn't have kids for 20 years.
Sorry?
20 years I did not have kids. Both of them came from screaming to God. This place in the whole world, you cannot find a place like this. Feel the wind.
Sorry, what's your name?
My name is Gili Nadav.
Nice to meet you. So there are people here. They're all praying, yes?
Each one have his own private. Like the girl that with the white shirt over here, she's asking for her husband. The other one asking for a girl. You can take my number and call me in 4 months, and I will surprise you that whatever they ask, they will get an answer. Always in this hour, before sun going down.
There's a couple that have come. The young man, oh look, he's taken out a little box with a ring. Oh, he's kneeling at her feet. Very sweet. And he's picked her up. I think she said yes. Mazal tov. Yeah, he's giving us the thumbs up. She said yes. They're falling into one another's arms. One answer already. But I haven't heard many others on this journey yet. My overwhelming sense is of groups of people living cheek by jowl, yet ignorant and terrified of one another, sharing only a love of this magical landscape. But here, on occupied land, I've only heard part of the spectrum of views that you can encounter between the river and the sea. More liberal Jewish voices than I've heard on the West Bank, for example, and Palestinian citizens of Israel, I'll only hear when I descend into Israel. That's in the next programme. Gili's about to lead prayers, remembering Israel's continuing anguish over the hostages in Gaza. But there are other prayers I hear too, before I leave Shul. I've just woken up, unexpectedly in the middle of the night, and I can hear through the open window not just the breeze rustling the trees, but also the sound of a muezzin, the call to prayer from a mosque in a neighbouring Arab village. It feels rather strange wafting over this religious, rather nationalistic Jewish settlement. It's reminding yet again of how jumbled up here everyone is, but somehow to me it feels like a warning that things can't go on as they are. Sooner or later, there has to be a solution. The documentary podcast from the BBC World Service was produced and presented by me, Tim Hewell, with sound mixing by Andy Fell and Neil Churchill. The production coordinator was Gemma Ashman and the editor, Penny Murphy. Please stay with me for A Slogan and a Land, Part 2, and some surprises when I reach the sea.